Blog Talk Radio.
If it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America here on PWTorchDailyCast.com. Good Sunday evening for April 23rd, 2023. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks. You can find me on Twitter at Greg M. Parks. And we do this show every Sunday live on PWTorchDailyCast.com, taking your phone calls and emails about the big shows in pro wrestling. We have several coming up with AEW's pay-per-view in May. We've also got Backlash from Puerto Rico, a WWE offering once the calendar turns to May as well. We also look back on big shows, and that's what we're going to do tonight. Impact held their Rebellion pay-per-view last Sunday night while this show was going on, so we're going to backtrack a little bit, talk about Rebellion, talk about the follow-up TV on Impact this past week. And we'll also, maybe if we've got time, talk a little WWE draft. We'll also be fielding your questions and comments. If you want to call us up, it's 515-605-9345. Make sure to press 1 to show up in the queue. And if you'd like to email us, you can email us anytime with your questions about the big shows in pro wrestling and anything else you have questions about wrestling-related, and that is wnialivecast@gmail.com. So I want to bring in my co-host here tonight who's going to help me with Impact, as he does frequently. He's the guy I call on when I need Impact analysis here on Wrestling Night in America. He's never steered me wrong. It's Darren Lilly. Darren, PWTorch.com contributor, thank you so much for joining me tonight.
Oh, well, thanks for having me tonight. I'm glad to be here. Looking forward to recapping the show and talking about whatever we want to talk about.
That's the part I love. You know, we got to talk about you know, the big shows, all that kind of stuff. Then we get to talk about whatever we want to talk about. And that's really what we're here for, after all. Darren, Rebellion, Impact last week. Just kind of overall, you know, this was a unique show, and Tom Phillips was hammering that home throughout the show, how unique it was, because there were two titles on the line that were vacant. Mickey James had to forfeit her Knockouts Championship because of injury, and Josh Alexander had to forfeit his Impact World title due to injury. So unique circumstances, the main event and the semi-main event were both title matches where there was no, you know, reigning champion coming into the match. So that in mind, what did you think of the show as a whole?
Yeah, it certainly was a historic night, because I don't believe that's happened before, where they had to fill the two major titles in Impact. I don't believe that's happened before. So you knew something big was going to happen. They came through the pay-per-views and the weekly and the monthly specials that are on Impact Plus. Always, you know, hit a home run. They're really good most of the time. I'm sure there might be one that's so-so here and there, but for the most part, they're excellent. It's an excellent night of wrestling. This one was no exception. Two big vacancies, of course, filled by a rising star and then a returning star who's getting back in the spotlight after being down, and I'm talking about Deonna in that one. She hadn't been the most featured person in the Knockouts division for a while. What they do is they kind of rotate people every once in a while, and so she had been on the back burner, kind of doing tag team stuff with Chelsea Green before Chelsea departed for WWE, and had a feud with Giselle Shaw, which I really enjoyed, even though it was kind of a secondary feud. They were throwing chili on each other. It was all kind of ridiculousness, but it was very entertaining. And then on the other side of it, for the world title, was Steve Maclin winning the championship. Just a guy who wasn't necessarily on people's radar as some of the bigger name free agents. When he got cut a couple of years ago from WWE, part of the part of Gunner's group, the Forgotten Sons, a very fitting name in this. And it's kind of goes back to what Impact does well, the management does. They'll take a guy who's not necessarily in the spotlight, build him up, give him an opportunity, and Maclin grabbed that ball and ran with it, and now he's the world champion, and a very credible world champion, I might add. So, such a big night with those two crownings.
Yeah, we'll get into more about those matches and the decisions made in terms of the winners a little later on. We'll start at the top, though, with Ace Austin and Chris Bay defeating the Motor City Machine Guns Ultimate X match for the tag titles. A little bit of a change-up from what Impact usually does. It's usually the X Division match that starts off the show. Historically speaking, that's been what you could count on. But this was really good. Obviously, Austin and Bay, a very good team. And then you've got the Motor City Machine Guns, which I don't know. Alex Shelley and Chris Sabin just don't ever seem to age, or at least they don't show it in the ring. So just a really impressive match. How do you think the Ultimate X stipulation works for the tag match here? Because that's usually a singles match.
Right. And it worked fine here. They didn't do as much climbing as you sometimes see it in the singles, the multiple person matches. I noticed they kind of toned that down and did the very entertaining but safe match, and I kind of appreciate that. And as you say, the Guns, they might be as good as ever, which is just ridiculous considering Sabin just celebrated his 20th year with Impact. They were kind of touting that on their website, which is astounding. And they're at the top of their games, and they wrestled their style within the confines of the Ultimate X style match, but it was really good, and they're doing a great job of showcasing Chris Bay and Ace Austin, who they call ABC now for short, so that's their tag team name. But yeah, really good match, and a good way to start it with tag team action as opposed to X-Division action, as you pointed out.
What do you make of the Impact tag team situation right now, as far as just the division as a whole?
It's got some contenders in there. ABC, Ace and Bay. They've been building to this for a while because they went over to Japan and were involved in a tag team tournament. And even while they were there, Impact would show clips of them, interview clips, and showed clips from the tournament matches. So you could see that they were keeping the spotlight on those guys and knew that something would be brewing. And it's a good way to focus on, to let the fans know, hey, this tag team division is important. Re-signing, I think somebody just re-upped from the Guns, if I'm not mistaken, so they're going to be around for a while. They do a good job of taking outsiders as well, like Aussie Open has been in and out to keep that division fresh. So that's kind of the trick they use to keep that division fresh and giving them the spotlight in the Ultimate X, make sure that it's a priority, it seems.
And that's one of those things that Impact does, I think, more than any other company, or at least any other major company, is just that revolving door. And I know that's kind of a pejorative to some people, but it really keeps things fresh if you're Impact. You can bring in an Aussie Open. You've got – I mean, Impact has deals with so many different companies where they can bring wrestlers in and utilize them for a 3-month, 6-month window, and then they go back to wherever it was, you know, the company, their home company. So it does give a lot of opportunity, does give a lot of unique looks for the Impact roster. And I feel like they do that because their roster is full time is so small, and so many of those wrestlers are in the main, what you would call the heavyweight division, I guess. You have to, for the X division, where there's just not going to be a lot of full-time guys, for the the tag team division, where there's not going to be a lot of tag teams full-time, and even to a lesser extent for the women's division, although I don't think it's such an issue these days, you kind of bring in some of those new talents for short-term bumps here and there. And I think they've done a nice job, relatively speaking, of doing that and making perhaps the divisions seem a little deeper than they really are.
Right, exactly. That way you're not running through challengers and like, oh, who's left? Well, you know, you bring in somebody from New Japan or one of the other organizations, AAA, something like that, and then you can extend the run of everybody and not just have them churn through challengers left and right like that. So, yeah, they're doing it to the best, maximizing that open door policy the best way.
Speaking of tag teams, Dirty Dango, Joe Hendry, and Santino Marella making his in-ring return defeated The Design in a 6-man tag match. I thought more would have been made, and I had watched all the TV leading up to it. I thought they would have made a bigger deal about Santino returning to the ring after so much time off. He's now in this director of authority role in Impact Wrestling when Scott D'Amore was taken out. Now Scott D'Amore is back, so We'll see how that balances out. But were you surprised they didn't make a bigger deal about Santino's return to the ring?
This is about what I expected because he's been featured more as a comedy guy. So if you overdid it, I think that might have been too much. He's a lower card character, so I think it was fine, the placement of it. Fans reacted to it, and it was – I thought it was okay.
All right. The design, we finally got Sami Callihan on Impact TV sort of revealing his plan to, I guess, sabotage the design from within. It never really felt I guess it always seemed like this was the direction they were going to go because you were always wondering in the back of your mind while watching this, why would Sami Callihan want to be a part of this group? You know, it doesn't fit the Sami character. Like, what story are they telling here? So when the reveal was done, it kind of made sense, although, you know, I don't know if all the evidence he presented on Impact during his backstage or wherever he was cutting that promo to the camera listed, but are you surprised they went this direction, or is this kind of where you thought it was heading from the get-go?
I kind of figured this was what was going to happen. Traditionally, when they run these kind of angles, the heel team is just oblivious and just happy that somebody has joined their team, and they're not even looking at the blatant clues that are right in front of them. But this time, they acknowledged, like Diener would say, if you're not, you know, bluffing. And he would say that almost every week. So we kind of knew that maybe Callihan wasn't being sincere. And sure enough, it played out that way. So I wasn't surprised. But it was time that they brought this to a conclusion because it was kind of getting to that point. So this was a good place to pull the trigger on that.
Trey Miguel defeated Jonathan Gresham and Mike Bailey in an elimination match for the X Division Championship. The elimination stipulation was kind of odd. What do you make of, you know, obviously there's only going to be one elimination before the pin when there's a triple threat match. So what did you make of that particular stipulation within this match?
They usually don't do that. I was kind of surprised because two people would have to drop falls. So you usually want to avoid that, but I mean, it made the match. It was okay. The only thing that really disappointed me about that, not necessarily that aspect of it, was I thought it should have gone a little bit longer, which I guess is a testament to them because it went 14 minutes. But I thought we could have got a few more minutes out of it, preferably with all three, but due to the limitations of that stipulation. so maybe I didn't like the elimination part so much, now that you point it out.
What do you think of Jonathan Gresham's role in Impact? What's his upside, do you think? Is he a guy who is just going to be sort of the X Division challenger, be in that division and really pad things out? Or is there a path that you see for him to be an Impact World title challenger or perhaps even champion?
Just based on how they've booked him thus far, I kind of see him more toward the middle of the pack or perhaps a gatekeeper role where if you score a victory over Jonathan Gresham, that means you're headed for bigger things, perhaps a title shot, something like that. Mm-hmm. Just based on what we've seen so far, I just don't see them positioning him as at least a world champion, maybe X Division perhaps. I could definitely see that down the line, but maybe not your top tier perhaps.
Well, if you're just joining us, this is Wrestling Night in America on PWTorchDailyCast.com. I'm Greg Parks, along with Darren Lilly of the PW Torch family. PWTorch.com/GoVIP is where you can go to sign up for what's really a bargain with all the audio and just all the stuff, all the news that Wade Keller breaks on his audio. I mean, he's been ahead of the curve with all the CM Punk stuff that's going on in AEW. A lot of his audio geared toward that. I was on the flagship this past week and had a pleasure sitting down with Wade for a couple hours and just getting caught up. It's been a while since I've done audio with Wade, so I was happy to be on there. And you get all that kind of audio ad-free when you're a VIP member. And, of course, the PW Torch newsletter, the print newsletter you get as well. So just oodles of stuff from the Torch family pushing out content, meaningful content for your eyes and ears. And if you want to join us here tonight on Wrestling Night in America. 515-605-9345 is the number. You can also email us, wnialivecast@gmail.com. Let's go to our first phone call of the evening. It is Reverend Keith from Baltimore, Maryland. Reverend Keith, welcome to Wrestling Night in America. What's on your mind tonight? Hello, Reverend Keith, are you there?
Yes, how are you, Greg and Darren? How are you tonight?
Doing very well, thank you.
Thank you, and thank you for taking my call, Greg. On the topic of Impact Wrestling, I'm happy to see the National Treasure, Nick Aldis, back in Impact. It's been a while, and he's definitely been upgraded from the Brutus Magnus gimmick, which failed a number of years ago. What are you... That was funny. You know, I saw on Twitter a lot of people still calling him Magnus, but I love his confidence. I love his swagger. And I think that he will be a formidable opponent for one Steve Macklin. What are your thoughts, Darren, since you do cover Impact Wrestling for the Torch? What are your thoughts on this impending feud between Nick Aldis and Steve Macklin?
I think it's a good move. Aldis as the NWA champion, I think he proved to be a very – the way he carried himself when he had the title belt and represented himself as a champion, I thought was really good, kind of a throwback to the old NWA days. And if you bring that to Impact, that just adds a whole new element. I think it's a good matchup in the ring with Macklin as well. And it looks like they're kind of – sure, they're headed towards that, but they're holding it off just a bit. At least, you know, he's got to get past PCO to have that title match. So I like the way they're doing it. They're not rushing it. They're going to try to build up to it. I just wonder how long they're going to put that off. But it looks like they're building something big. So that's a good sign for him.
Yes,
Darren,
it's
always kind of made me wonder, you know, Nick Aldis, why he even went away from Impact. You know, he was in the NWA for quite a while. Had a falling out with Billy Corgan there, which caused him to leave, and now he's back in Impact. But it always felt like Impact was better off with him, and he was better off in Impact. But I don't know if it was ships passing in the night or what it was, but I am kind of surprised it took him so long to get back to Impact. Is that kind of your feeling too, Darren?
Yeah, because he was such a good fit originally with Impact. I was thinking maybe, I don't know the particulars, but maybe NWA just made him some kind of deal he couldn't pass up. Maybe that was it, because it looked like Impact was going to feature him as like the focal guy, at least when he left. But maybe in retrospect, it wasn't such a bad thing, because he got to showcase another element of himself in the NWA. They didn't turn, you know, it ended not on the greatest note, but I, in the long run, maybe for him, it was a good move, but I think he's going to do very well in Impact.
All right, Reverend Keith, we'll go back to you for your second question or comment for us.
Well, I wanted to comment on what you were just discussing about him coming back to Impact, and I wanted to mention this to Darren. Have you noticed, Darren, that Nick Aldis is rarely ever shown with Mickey? You know, I know they're husband and wife, but it's like, have you noticed that, Darren?
That is true. They don't really dwell on that too much. If I'm not mistaken, they had like a mixed tag or something, and really that was the only mention of it. And I guess it's for the best to keep them separated so they don't have to keep doing mixed tag feuds, I suppose. I kind of understand that, but they really don't ever mention it, so that's a little surprising.
I know.
I just point that out.
And it's odd in an era where there's so much focus on the significant others in professional wrestling, especially in the WWE, where it seems like everyone is in a couple with somebody.
Right.
You know, and it's kind of odd that you rarely see Nick Aldis and Mickie James together. So I'm sure you had noticed that, and I noticed it back a couple years ago. And I'm sorry that last rodeo had to come to an end, but shifting towards the women, I'm happy for Deonna Purrazzo, because this is the first time she will hold the Impact Women's Championship as a babyface.
Oh, it's true.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, that opens up a lot of opportunities, including, I guess, next week they're setting something up for her to go up against Taylor Wilde of the Coven. So, yeah, that puts a whole fresh perspective on this title reign, which is a good thing, not just a retread of what she's done before. So, yeah, good. Glad to see
you. I wonder what the big build is going to be. Like, who – I mean, obviously, Mickie James is out there. Deanna's going to have to defend against her when Mickey is healthy, and they have a very long, very storied history with Deanna as a heel. You know, part of me wonders if the next big challenge, not to say that Taylor Wilde isn't a big challenge, but she's not, the next big challenge kind of feels like Masha Slamovich coming off her performance in that hardcore war match. I thought, you know, she really – showed out well there, and I think she could present a big sort of monster heel challenge for a babyface Deanna Purrazzo, you know, whether it's that at the next pay-per-view or whatever it might be.
Definitely. If you build that up correctly, you could have a, you know, featured like Bound for Glory type match with those two, definitely. And then also don't forget Jordynne Grace should probably get some kind of rematch at some point, and you can build that up as something big as well.
Anything else for us, Reverend Keith?
Yes, moving onward to WWE. There's been much discussion, and we may have even alluded to this last week, about the tag team titles going back into the hands of the Usos. I know that's the main event this Friday, and it's the night one of the two-night draft. I do hope that if this happens, I hope that they will eventually split not only these tag titles but the world title in some way, because there's a rumor that they may do that, you know, so that you can have champions on each show. What are your thoughts on the potentiality, gentlemen, of splitting the titles, both the tag titles and the heavyweight title, like how it used to be, and what are your perspectives for night one of the draft? Thank you once again, Greg, for taking my call. Darren, as always, it's good talking to you. Have a blessed week.
Thank you. You do the same, Reverend Keith. Yeah, I feel like it would be cheating if Roman Reigns loses one of his titles simply by management order, you know, of, oh, you know, we're doing this draft for the first time in over a year. You know, we're going to split the title. Roman, you have to give one of them up. You know, you're losing out on the rub of someone, you know, winning that championship from Roman Reigns. And then you'd still have Roman with a championship, you know? So that would be frustrating to me as a fan to see that, because we've spent countless minutes on this show over the last how long, I don't know how long he's been double champion, but we spent a lot of time speculating about, okay, well, maybe they, you know, maybe it's Roman Reigns versus so-and-so, and maybe they put one of the titles on the line somehow, or maybe this is how they split the titles. And I think for it to all come down to, well, it's happenstance because it's the draft and each show wants its own title again, like, I feel like that would be kind of a letdown for how it was originally curated with Reigns winning both titles.
Yeah, I would be disappointed if they were to split it that way. I just have a feeling, just because they haven't done it yet, I don't think they are going to split the titles at any point. In fact, I think they're going to go the other direction and unify the women's belts, and just because business has been so good while this has happened, I don't think they want to tinker with it. I just think that they're going to head in that direction and start unifying. You could unify the Intercontinental and U.S. belts too. I think they're headed in that direction, in fact.
Wow.
So you have one focus for each division.
What do you think about Reverend Keith's idea of the Usos winning back the titles on SmackDown this week? Do you think that's likely to happen? And do you think that would be the right call if they did it?
I wouldn't be surprised if that happened. I think they probably will, because they like having the bloodline with the belts that that seems to be the direction. It wouldn't hurt Sammy and Owens that much if they were to lose them back. They had their big moment at WrestleMania, and that's fine. I think there might be more title opportunities if the Usos, more championship matches if the Usos had the belt. So we might go back to that, maybe losing them for a bit freshens them up somewhat. So it would not surprise me if they go back to that.
I think I mentioned this when I was on with Wade this week because he brought that up as well, the title match that's coming up. And, you know, one of the arguments made, and I'm famously pro-Cody winning at WrestleMania. So that's kind of how I'm approaching this. I thought he should have won. You know, one of the arguments that has been made to defend Roman winning at WrestleMania was, well, now we get to see how Roman will treat the Usos because they don't have a title and he does. And they've been champions for so long. And that was one of the big selling points to sort of move the Bloodline storyline along was, okay, now we get to see how Roman will treat them. How is he going to shun them? What is he going to make them do? How is he going to treat them? Well, if you put the titles back on them like 3 weeks later, and you've done basically nothing except have, I guess, you know, have Roman pretend he wasn't in the building when the Usos wanted to see them and, you know, not really any follow-up to that from the Usos' point of view, like, then you can throw that excuse out the window because it didn't materially affect the Bloodline story in any way. So, you know, that would be my only hesitation in saying, yeah, they'll probably put the titles back on the Usos is, well, you know, are they already done telling that story of the Usos don't have the championship, Roman does? How much is that going to piss Roman off?
That's an excellent point. You don't want to leave some really good storyline material on the table by doing that. But related to that, how often is Roman going to be on TV in the summer with his new schedule? I wonder if he's even going to defend. I guess they have a Saudi Arabia show coming up. I would presume he's going to be on that. I don't know that for sure. He's not going to be on Backlash. I'm not sure what United States pay-per-view is after that. But, I mean, I could feasibly see him not showing up to SummerSlam, so that may not even be a factor. Now, I don't know that, but it sure doesn't. I haven't heard him advertise or anything either. So,
yeah, you could
continue. Yeah,
you could continue to tell that story even without Roman on TV. I mean, you could have Heyman talking for him. You could have the Usos themselves advancing the story without necessarily Roman being there. So there's that piece of it too. I mean, they've done that to kind of get out of Roman not being on TV for so long and still needing to push that story forward. So it wouldn't surprise me if they did that. Let's go back to Rebellion here, pick up where we left off. The hardcore war that I mentioned, Tommy Dreamer, Bhupinder Gujar, Kazarian, Killer Kelly, Inuya Imura, defeating Bully Ray, Brian Myers, Kenny King, Masha Slamovich, and Moose. I tell you, the stars of this match to me were the women, you know, and I'm not someone who is waving the flag of man versus women matches. I just, it doesn't really do anything for me. But I thought, you know, and I will preface this by saying I'm a huge Killer Kelly fan. And I thought the way they introduced her in Impact was fantastic. I thought she was a star in this match. She looked the part. I thought she really stood out to me in this match. And then Masha Slamovich, I think for a lot of the same reasons Killer Kelly did, also stood out to me here. You know, I do think, and this is, you know, the Impact Hardcore match that you get every pay-per-view. Kushida getting the title match, I don't want to get too much into that yet, but, you know, it made me think, like, that's an odd choice for a babyface. Like, I get Steve Macklin being in that match, but Kushida's an odd choice. Then you go up and down the babyface roster, and it's like, well, if not Kushida, who? And you think, like, maybe Tommy Dreamer is, like, the number two babyface behind Josh Alexander, like, in the quote-unquote heavyweight division. And that would be a problem, I think. Like, is Impact spending too much time on Tommy Dreamer and Bully Ray and, you know, their Busted Open show and all that stuff that so much of the story is built around?
Yes. short answer.
No hesitation from Darren on that.
Right. This was hasn't been my favorite storyline, but I guess as a means to an end to get them some publicity. And also, as this match shows, it uses Dreamer and Bully to give the spotlight to some of the people who wouldn't necessarily maybe not get that time, like Gujar, like Yuya. And, of course, Masha and Killer Kelly, which this was actually turned out to be a match that I enjoyed because of that reason. It gives you some challengers that you might not have thought of because, yeah, as you just pointed out, that pool is kind of shallow, but now you hype up Frankie Kazarian a bit, Brian Myers, and then Moose has been on the back burner, and you remember, oh, yeah, he's a dominant guy. He could be a title contender. Kenny King got some spotlight. So this match did a good job of spotlighting those people who potentially down the line could be title contenders.
Yeah, for sure. I think so. It was kind of like a weird, like, early 90s Survivor Series team where there was some guys, like, I know Bhupinder Gujar has kind of, like, showed up in some backstage segments to make the save and things like that, but it's just kind of like a bit of a mismatch, I think. But, yeah, I think there were certain people who stood out here for sure in this. Steve Maclin versus Kushida, a world title. We talked a little bit about it already. I think for some people who are not usual Impact viewers, Maclin is going to seem like an odd choice. Did he do enough in this match, you think, to sort of cement him as the right choice to go with as world champion while Josh Alexander is convalescing?
Yeah, I thought he really came through. It didn't come across as a letdown, and it really could have if he was not ready for that spot. But no, the way they built him up, the way he carries himself, the way he does the promos, the interviews, it was the right time, and he proved to be the right guy. It was not a letdown whatsoever. He felt like he belonged in that spot, and that goes a long way. They had some faith in him, and he really came through.
Yeah, I think this was the right choice. I like what Maclin has done. I never saw him when he was in WWE as a guy who could be the head of a company, but I think he's done it here and done it well. They had a big segment with him on Impact. You know, eventually Scott D'Amore comes out, introduces PCO. He'll be Macklin's opponent at Under Siege next month in Toronto, their Impact Plus special event. This was really the first time for Maclin to carry a long promo segment of his own. What did you think? How do you think he did?
I thought he did really well. He interacted with the crowd. It looked like he kind of improvised a little bit, talking about a little kid that was getting on his case. Like, he wasn't afraid to fight the little kid. So he adapted well to them coming after him. It didn't drag whatsoever. So, yeah, if you're going to be a champion and get all that airtime, you're going to have to carry some lengthy segments. He did a good job of going toe-to-toe with Scott D'Amore, who's, you know, very good in that role and very polished. So, yeah, so inside the ring and doing the promos. Again, he was a guy that, just like you, I didn't even really notice too much and didn't get much screen time in WWE. So this comes as a major surprise to me. Evaluate talent over there and Impact is doing a really good job because you took a guy that, as I said, was on no one's radar pretty much, and now he's a champion and there's no backlash of people like, why this guy? No, because if you've been watching all along, you see exactly why.
Mm-hmm. And it looks like they're doing a bit of a slow burn with building Nick Aldis as his opponent. Aldis also had a long promo segment on Impact. It was backstage. He said he wasn't going to interrupt Macklin's speech because Maclin had asked that no one interrupt it. And he was true to his word. He didn't come out and say anything. So, you know, obviously his eyes are on the prize. But Maclin, as you said earlier, has got to get through PCO first. Do you like the idea of this kind of slow simmering build? You know, Aldis got involved after the match. He was the special guest commentator at Rebellion for the Macklin versus Kushida match, got involved in the post-match happenings. So it seems like all roads are going to lead to, you know, Alexander's going to be on the shelf for quite a while. So all roads look like they're leading to Aldis versus Macklin for the next pay-per-view. I kind of like how they've written the first few chapters of this one.
Yeah, because initially when Aldis came out at Rebellion, I just figured, oh, well, they'll be wrestling for the title at the next Impact Plus special, and that is not the case. Looks like they're going to draw it out a little bit. This is something potentially they could make the character of Nick Aldis kind of earn it, you know, since he's been away. You don't just come in getting a title shot here. That's something they could draw out to Bound for Glory to really want the fan base to look forward to this. I could see that. It absolutely would fit as a Bound for Glory main event if done correctly. Maybe they're headed that direction, or maybe they're going to do it at one of the shows this summer or something. But either way, there's going to be a good build, and when it happens, I think the fan base will be appreciative of it.
I think the problem with stretching it out to Bound for Glory, at least, you know, waiting until doing their first match there, is sort of what we talked about earlier, that lack of babyface depth, right? Like, I mean, so you're going to fill probably an Impact. They don't do pay-per-views every month, but they do monthly specials on Impact Plus. And, you know, you don't have to do a title match every month, but certainly the champion has got to be in a match of some sort. So who then are you building as a babyface to go from May, actually June, because May is going to be PCO, but June until October, Bound for Glory, to fill that time. And I think that's where the struggle is going to be, unless you do some turns. I don't know, maybe you turn Moose babyface, maybe you do multiple months of PCO, maybe you have Sami Callihan. You know, there are options. I'm not sure how good the options of those are, but I think that would be my hesitation about wanting to draw it out that long, at least for their first encounter.
That is an excellent point. If you were going to pad it out, though, the first name that popped in my head was Moose, because you could just have the you know, two dominant heels go at it, and you could certainly tell that story. You could,
and they have
Tommy
a history.
Dreamer. Yes, exactly, right, because they had a big storyline last year, so that certainly was it. You could put, offhand, you know, like, oh, I don't know about this, but you could put Tommy Dreamer in there with the storyline of him going for his last title shot or whatever, and it could be an effective story. Sure, it wouldn't be the strongest in-ring match, but you could certainly do it. There's also Rich Swann on the horizon as a former world champion, because I thought he did very well in the challenger role against Josh Alexander, and I thought he rose to that occasion. No reason you couldn't do that against Macklin, too, to at least establish Macklin as a getting him a strong win under his belt if you want to go in that direction. So I guess it could be done, but yeah, it's starting to thin out after that. You're definitely correct.
And then Deonna Purrazzo defeating Jordynne Grace to win the Knockouts Championship in the main event. First, were you surprised that this got the main event slot?
Yeah, I certainly expected it to go first and then the Macklin-Kushida match to go last. But, you know, makes sense at the end, though. You want to end with a feel-good moment, and that wasn't necessarily Macklin winning. So both Deonna and Jordan, the fan, had big fan support. So good way to end it, and they certainly weren't out of place in a main event. But, yeah, it did surprise me.
And I think that was the key, too. Like, they were both baby faces. So by having them go on last, if your idea is, well, we want to send the fans home happy, it still doesn't give away the result. Because, you know, either result, technically, because they're both baby faces, would have sent fans home happy. The decision to go with the Purrazzo over Grace here, to me, was a coin flip. I don't think you could have made a wrong decision. But talk a little bit about, you know, why you think they may have gone with Deonna over Jordynne Grace here in this spot.
That is a good point, because going in, I really didn't know which one of them would. The way they told the story, it wasn't clear who was going to win it, and maybe they didn't even know. But I'm on board with Deonna, just because, kind of like I talked about earlier, I think she's like the best person in the Knockouts division, and it was time to return to her as the dominant person that the division is built around, because she had been in some secondary angles like the tag team thing and stuff that I mentioned. So it was time. This is always going to happen, and what better time than now? You've got some fresh people coming in like Jody Threat, and then Killer Kelly and Masha is still fresh. So this is as good a time as any to do it. She had to return back to the top spot, and I'm glad they did it.
I've seen a lot of people online giving high praise to this match. What did you think of the match in terms of where it ranks among some of the more recent knockouts matches or knockouts title matches as far as just match quality?
I would be hard-pressed to, off my head, maybe with the exception of Jordan against Masha Slamovich, I want to say at Bound for Glory, if I have that correct. This was just beneath that. It was really good. No shenanigans, no gimmicks or anything like that. They just went straight up at it, and it went about 18 minutes. Didn't feel that it was that long. I mean, they were going at it the whole match through. So, yeah, good main event. And it's just below. It's in the top tier of knockouts matches, just below that match I just mentioned, though.
Well, that was Impact Rebellion, so we'll have to keep our eye on Under Siege as it comes up next May next month in May from Toronto. So PCO getting a shot against Steve Macklin for the world title. Let's go back to the phones. It's the 862 area code, which means it's Kylan from New Jersey. Kylan, welcome to Wrestling Night in America tonight. What's the first of your three-pack of questions for us?
Are you and Darren aware of the breaking news that came down earlier today regarding the CEO of NBCU?
Yes, I believe he stepped down because there were accusations made against him of a sort of a similar nature, I guess, to Vince McMahon, at least. Harassment accusations made against him.
That is indeed correct, Greg.
What do I win? I got it right.
I'll figure that out and get back to you.
Okay, excellent.
So. Obviously, my first question for the two of you is, how does Jeff Shell's departure figure into WWE's about to begin or perhaps ongoing negotiation process with NBC Universal?
I don't know. I wouldn't say that it probably has a huge impact, which is kind of weird to think that, like, the president of a network stepping down or the president of the owner or the business above the network stepping down, it has no effect on a gigantic rights fee negotiation. But nothing that I've seen so far from reliable reporters have said that this is going to be, an earth-shattering thing for WWE. I would assume that, and not knowing who the replacement is going to be and things like that and what their opinion is on WWE or what their opinion is on, WWE's relationship with Peacock and things like that. It's so hard to say. Like, I think it complicates things a little bit and maybe slows things down, Darren, but I don't know that materially it's going to change a lot of that discussion.
Jamie Keltner, anyone?
Well, that would be the other side of the argument, I suppose.
Right. Yeah, I haven't seen any immediate ramifications, but, I mean, regardless of who's in charge, you have an important piece of entertainment that spans different networks and everything, so it's still regardless of who's there, it's not going to be some guy coming in saying, well, I don't like wrestling, so we're not going to negotiate with them. I don't see that necessarily happening just from a business aspect. Things have changed since those WCW days where, I mean, you've got to come to the table with these guys. So I don't think it'll have that big of an impact. Not that I'm that familiar with the whole situation or who might be coming to replace them, but I don't think they have anything to worry about on the surface, I wouldn't think.
All right, Kylan, back to you for your second question for us.
For my second question, who do you suppose will be the biggest singles division winners and losers of the upcoming draft on both the male and female sides of both brands?
Well, see, you know, the thing about the draft is it's not just about a single person moving. And, like, to be honest with you, there are so many wrestlers who are going back and forth right now. It's not – I don't think it's going to have the impact of, wow, The Miz moving from Raw to SmackDown, or Damian Priest moving from Raw to SmackDown. He's on both shows anyway. So, you know, I think the impact is going to be minimal in terms of that. But it really also depends on who is moved around them, you know, because in a vacuum, Seth Rollins moving to SmackDown, you know, you could see as a negative. But if people move off of SmackDown to Raw to give him a better platform, and maybe, you know, some people stay on SmackDown that he matches up really well with as an opponent, then you can say, you know, Seth Rollins is a winner here. And that's, you know, sort of what I'm going to do in my column, as I do for every draft, my column in the Torch newsletter. I'll look at some winners and losers of the moving and shaking that happens during the draft after it's all said and done. But it's not to cop out of answering this question, but without seeing any other moves around them, it's hard to just pick a person in a vacuum to say, well, I think this person's going to be a winner. I mean, you could look at it and say, who on the roster do you think WWE is going to protect with a move or a non-move? You know, I think of a guy like Austin Theory. I think he might be a big winner coming out of it. You know, whatever happens, whether he stays on Raw, whether he moves to SmackDown. You know, I talked about this with Wade on the flagship. Is Damian Priest is really broken out, I think, of Judgment Day. And I'm not convinced that Judgment Day stays together as a group after the draft. And if that happens, I think Damian Priest potentially could be a breakout single star on his own. So, you know, those are just kind of some ideas. Darren, I know, you know, it's hard without seeing a list of who's moving where, but do you get a sense of who might be somebody WWE wants to really, not necessarily even protect, but really put in a strong position after this draft?
It's again, for so many reasons, it's tough to say. I'm not sure how much impact the draft is going to have in the first place, because your big name acts are going to wind up being on both shows regardless. The Bloodline, you really think Cody's just going to be restricted to one show? I don't think so. Same goes for Judgment Day and Rey Mysterio.
Darren, if they do something where, like you suggested, combining the titles or not uncombining the titles, I mean, you're at least going to have the tag champs probably on both shows. You're at least going to have Roman Reigns appearing on both shows when he does appear. And if they combine the other titles, as you suggested they might do, you know, that's going to be more crossover than we're even used to maybe now.
Exactly. So it's going to be business as usual to me. But to answer the question, I think somebody who could potentially be in a bad spot, perhaps, they're going to split some tag teams probably just to create some kind of waves. And generally when that happens, one member of the team flourishes and one kind of is sent to the background. So I would beware if I'm a tag team. Maybe they might do that with name slips on mine. but a couple of the teams were probably
Street Profits is the one that comes to my mind. Because I figured that's what you were fishing for, Darren, because as you were talking, I'm thinking, I'm thinking Montez Ford. I mean, he's a guy who they've sort of dipped their toe in the water with as a singles wrestler. And I think he's a guy they look at with a lot of potential as a singles wrestler. So, I mean, if you are going to do something where you break up tag teams, then, yeah, Montez Ford is a guy that I could see them really wanting to try to get behind. I think that's an eventuality. I don't think it's an if, but a when. And they might decide now is the when.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, and Dawkins has really stepped it up in the ring. So it's not like he's just, if they're being honest, he shouldn't be pushed down.
Yeah, for a maybe a terrible comparison, he would not be the Tucker of the Otis and Tucker tag team. Like, he would not be the guy.
That example came to my head.
We all saw that coming when they separated those two. It's like, okay, start the clock on how long it's going to take until Tucker gets released. Like, you just knew it was going to happen. They were going to fall in love with Otis. Vince was, to be more specific. And then, like, Tucker would get left behind. You know, I don't think that's going to happen with these two.
No, but that's the first example I thought of. So, but yes, I'm wishing both the best.
All right, Kylan, your third and final question for us tonight.
Are you surprised that MLW's Court Bauer has all but announced plans to take one of his two shows live this year, despite having to pay out what I assume are enormous legal fees to high-powered lawyers for lawsuits against WWE for their somewhat shady television negotiating practices.
You know, I'm in an I'll believe it when I see it state with MLW. We've heard a lot of things from Court Bauer over the years that make it sound like MLW is just on the cusp of getting that big deal that's going to take him to the next level, and they haven't gotten it. It seems like they've come close, whether or not WWE truly interfered in their deals that the lawsuit claims. It would be par for the course for WWE, but I'm dubious that they see MLW as such competition that they would take the extraordinary steps that were alleged in the MLW complaint. I would love to see MLW succeed. I think as a booker / writer, however you want to categorize it, I think Court Bauer does have some strengths. You know, he learned from Gary Hart. He learned in the WWE system. So he knows the good and the bad, I guess. But I just, it's for me, Darren, and I don't know how much you've seen of MLW, but it's an I'll believe it when I see it with that.
Yeah, I'm not the most familiar with MLW. I've peeked in on a couple of episodes since it's been on Reels, I believe the station is. Yeah, I'm not sure where these live specials are supposed to be airing, so I guess is it streaming or something? I suppose that could happen. But, yeah, I haven't really given it much thought. But, yeah, as soon as they announce something, I guess we'll see.
And for the record, we don't know where these live specials will even go, because MLW's deal with Reels ends presumably on May the 30th.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's a major question that has to be answered too. So when I say I'll believe it when I see it, that's a big reason why right there. Kylan, thank you so much for the call this week. I look forward to hearing from you again soon.
You're welcome, Greg.
So, Darren, one more thing on the draft. I have this written down as something that I wanted to talk about. We're going to do a full Backlash preview episode next week, by the way. So my co-host and I will be tackling the Backlash card. And then the week after on, I believe it's May 6th is when that pay-per-view is, I'll be going on the air right as Backlash goes off the air, taking your phone calls and emails right here on pwtorchdailycast.com. But the draft is positioned a little oddly. Well, no, I mean, it's Friday night. You got the Friday, and then you've got the Monday, and that's how WWE's been doing the draft. They start it on SmackDown and they end it on Raw. You know, SmackDown the first night of the draft, it's on Fox as opposed to on USA, so the prestige is there to do it on Friday nights. But I don't know. Maybe it's my OCD, but I'd much rather have it start on a Monday and end on a Friday. Does that make more sense for you to do it that way?
Yeah, I would rather see it that way, right? And then you can wrap it up on that Friday. But I guess the big question this year is, will that Fox Sports robot appear to help with the drafting this year?
I hope so. He was one of my top drafters. I had him graded very highly in the year that that he made those draft picks. We're assuming that, and I think it's maybe even been overtly stated, that NXT will be a part of the draft in terms of wrestlers being drafted from NXT to the main roster. Is there anyone top of mind for you that, you know, if I had to say, Darren, I need your three most likely wrestlers to get drafted from NXT to the main roster, who would you have for me on your list?
I'm going to say Bron Breakker and Pretty Deadly. So that's my three, and it would not surprise me to see, especially Bron. I was trying to think from the women's division, and I think the people that are there should be given maybe Indy Hartwell. I don't think she's going to really – I mean, I think she is what she is. They might as well bring her – but she's a champion right now, so I don't know if she's going to do that right now. But, like, Tiffany Stratton, for instance, that's somebody I think they had big plans for, but I think it just might be too early to bring her up. And the same with Booker T's protege, whose name escapes me right now.
Roxanne Perez.
Yes, who used to be in ROH, right, yeah. It's the same for her. I would keep her in NXT just for some seasoning. But they got to bring somebody up, and I'm not sure who from the women's division. But the other two, the Pretty Deadly and Braun, they're ready, so might as well bring them up.
That is one of the drawbacks, you know, I think – a lot of the women would do well on the main roster, but there's just a lot of the women that you would say are so young, like Cora Jade and Roxanne Perez, like you do feel like they are ones who could actually use some more seasoning in NXT before they get brought up. You can only be brought up for the first time once and make a first impression with the audience. So I think, you know, that's something they need to keep in mind too. My only hesitation, and I know this is so weird to talk about because we've been predicting Bron Breakker to the main roster for like a year now, if not longer, and now when there's actually like evidence that they're going to bring NXT wrestlers up, it's like, well, wait a minute, because he just turned heel. And so my hesitation is, you know, are they going to bring him up to the main roster without really fully fleshing out that heel turn in NXT? And, you know, maybe they do a situation where he gets called up to the main roster but kind of finishes out the storyline on NXT. I mean, that's happened before. It's not out of the realm of possibility. But that would be my only hesitation about calling Breakker up at this moment.
Right, because the whole point of turning him heel was, I suppose, just so he could get that experience in, and it's only been a few weeks. But, yeah, and I can't remember who they did this with before, but, yeah, they split their time in between the two leagues, and you could certainly do that and could do that successfully. So maybe they'll go in that direction. Who else do you think they might bring up?
Yeah, I mean, you know, as far as most ready, I think Carmelo Hayes is a guy, but, you know, the same argument with Indy Hartwell. I mean, he's champion right now, so – you know, again, not unprecedented to bring up the champion, but it would complicate things a little more, I think. Yeah, it really all depends on what they're looking for, I think. I think there's obviously a lot of talent there, but, you know, do you want more baby faces than heels? Do you want someone who's going to be just a lower card character, or do you want someone like, because you could bring up, you know, Andre Chase, if you wanted like a lower card sort of comedy character. But if you wanted somebody serious, you're probably not going to bring him up. It really all depends. You know, the Creeds are another team that I think is earmarked for big things on the main roster at some point. But again, there's still a long way for them to go, I think, in terms of development. So I think it would be a mistake to bring them up. It's just there are a lot of wrestlers in NXT that are at various stages of development. So there might be a temptation to call some of them up, but you really have to be judicious about making sure that, you know, Zoe Stark is one that I know she's been wrestling on the main event tapings. I think she would be a real solid addition to the women's roster on the main roster. So, you know, she's one that jumps out to me amongst the women. But we'll have to see. And that's the fun part. We get to wait and see, and we don't have all the answers. So it's part of the exciting part of the draft when they include those NXT talents. I'll go to our final phone call of the evening. It is DJ from Miami. DJ, welcome to Wrestling Night in America tonight. What's on your mind?
Hi, guys. My first thing is the CM Punk thing with the Warner Brothers Discovery. They're saying that they want CM Punk on the Saturday show and everything's messed up and they don't know, you know, what's going to go on, how the ratings are going to go on. But, I mean, at this point, I mean, I don't know. What do you think? I mean, do you think he should just wait his contract out? Do you think everybody's going to play nice? I just don't know what they're going to do at the end of the day with this show. And, you know, it's already a cluster over there, so adding another show, like, what is this really going to do? CM Punk's really going to have one show? They came in, I don't even know how Friday's surviving.
Yeah. So I talked with Wade at length about this topic on the flagship, Darren, so I'm going to kind of give you the floor to opine about, you know, the return of CM Punk, which looks a lot more definite now than it did even a week ago, the potential of him to sort of quote-unquote get his own show with his wrestlers on it and his, you know, to kind of keep him away from the Elite and all that kind of stuff, the new AEW show, and just your thoughts on all of that.
Yeah, it certainly looks like it's going to happen. Yeah, I don't think it's a matter of if anymore. I think it's really going to happen. I think it can be worked out. I mean, sports franchises have had fights, maybe not to this degree, maybe sometimes worse, and they've managed to work it out in the interest of forging ahead and winning championships, and in this case, you know, making money for everyone. I think it can be done, and they're supposedly having some kind of talks or whatever, and they definitely need to have that to get onto the same page and do business. Again, I wasn't involved in the fight, but I think it's something that can be overcome at some point and just agree to be professionals. Now, as far as having an actual Saturday show, yeah, it seems like a lot, but if you kind of do that soft split and have guys that aren't getting airtime, and there's plenty of them, it's almost like you have a brand new show. So I'm kind of looking forward to seeing guys that didn't necessarily get time, like Bandido's coming back. He's going to need airtime. And I don't know if he necessarily got that within the confines of the 2 hours of Dynamite. I'm not even kind of Rampage, but I think this opens up some opportunity. I don't know if they're bringing back like Miro. I don't see why you wouldn't let him on there, CM Punk, and really utilize people. Sky Blue comes to mind on the women's division. So I'm hopeful this will get people more airtime and add some freshness to storyline. So we'll see where it goes.
What kind of message does this send to the locker room? If, you know, Wade has reported pretty consistently that there's not a lot of support for Punk in the AEW locker room. You know, there is some, just not a ton. What is the message that the locker room gets for Tony Khan to basically ignore all of that noise and bring Punk back and give him such special treatment that he's basically going to, quote-unquote, give him his own show so that he is under the company umbrella. I mean, you know, you could make the argument that it's going to give more wrestlers more opportunities. You could make the argument that it's going to give, you know, the company more money because Punk's going to bring in eyeballs and pay-per-view buys and all that kind of stuff. But is there a risk here that Tony Khan could potentially lose at least a portion of the locker room by making this decision?
There's always that risk. But it comes down to, like, real sports, and which is the world that Tony comes from. I mean, just to give a really old example, superstars are just treated different. Like, that issue came up with, like, I recall Terrell Owens when he was with the Cowboys, if I'm not mistaken, and he had gotten some kind of trouble, but they just kind of let it go because, I mean, he was carrying the team. And Punk is a difference maker, and rules are just going to be different. And that's just an unfortunate part of life. We don't always have to like it, but if somebody is a difference maker, sometimes you have to make concessions if you want to, you know, have this additional show and additional revenue on a Saturday, which supposedly the Warner Brothers brass wanted. You're just going to have to make those concessions sometimes and work as a team. It's unfortunate, but that's how it is.
All right, DJ, back to you for your second question or comment for us.
The good thing is the other Khan from the other show, WWE, he was saying that he wants to bring back Blood at the 10 o'clock hour. I mean, what? Okay, buddy. Like, I don't know. Like, what do you guys really think of that at the end of the day? Like, go PG-13 at the 10 o'clock hour? Like, don't you think they break tables the whole night anyways and do all nonsense? I mean, how much more PG-13 can it really get?
I recall that, and this, I believe the news was that they were looking at making the third hour of Raw more adult. You know, the last time we had this, it was the 24/7 title was introduced, and it was only going to be used in the third hour of Raw, and we know how long that lasts. So when things like this come down the pike, Darren, I've learned to not put a lot of stock into them because usually they don't last very long. So I would be surprised if this gained a lot of traction, and even if it was implemented, I would be surprised if it lasted very long, either in, you know, as a third hour only type thing or just overall.
Right. I kind of just think he was just kind of talking. I don't expect those kind of changes to happen. Yeah, no, we don't need another 24/7 title or Raw Underground, which was both such successes. And plus, with the them talking about getting more marketing deals, like they want to be like the UFC, I think they would only take it so far because they don't want to turn off those potential sponsors. So I don't really see any kind of drastic changes. You might get a curse word here and there. I doubt they'll bring back Blood.
Look at WrestleMania, which was, you know, not even on cable. It was on, you know, Peacock. So you'd think that, you know, my fiance has watched the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air show, the new one on there. And, you know, they don't want for cursing or anything like that, let me tell you. But, you know, they couldn't even on Peacock for WrestleMania, they wouldn't even show the accidental blood of Finn Balor. So now you're going to tell me, and I'm supposed to believe that, oh, we're going to allow blood. We're going to, I mean, with my words, but embrace it on the third hour of Raw on USA. Like, I just, again, going back to the Court Bauer quote, I'll believe it when I see it. Like, it just doesn't ring true from what we've seen of WWE in the recent past. DJ, let's go back to you for your final question or comment for us.
Question. Same company. They were talking about they want to do the Twitch streams again. Like, I don't know about you, but, like, it's bad enough they're on Twitter, but, you know, it's like, how are they really going to regulate? Who's going to wear what? Are they going to drink? What are they going to do? Like, are they going to curse? Like, do you really want to see your superstar like that? I don't. Like, I'd rather them, like, old school mysteries and, you know, before all this, you know, media, you know what I'm saying? So I don't know what they're going to do with this unless they have it in the center. I don't know how they're going to regulate this and give them that money.
So this is the news of WWE allowing its superstars
they
on
said
Twitch.
With them. That's what they're saying. They're working on a deal with them.
Yes, and it's going to be, you know, they're going to allow the wrestlers to make money. WWE is going to take a cut of it through Twitch, is my understanding. It's not through the performer themselves, so it's not like the performer is giving up money that they're making on Twitch to WWE. Again, that's how I understand it. Like, I don't profess to be a Twitcher. Like, I don't know what the person on Twitch, like, I don't know anything about it. Darren, I don't know if you're more well-schooled than I am in the world of Twitch, but I know that this was a big to-do when WWE basically stopped letting their talent at least use their WWE names to make money on Twitch, and that was a big Zelina Vega thing when she was initially released from the company. So this kind of feels like a we'll meet you halfway type deal. But it's to me, it's better than nothing. And for a group that, you know, doesn't have a union to fight for them and doesn't have, like, you know, they're still considered, you know, the not employees. So they're independent contractors, even though that's basically a name only. Like, they don't have a lot of rights. So I guess maybe WWE throwing them this bone is a good thing. But I don't know that much about Twitch. So Darren, if you know any more than I do, please save me here. I'm drunk.
I am by no means a Twitch expert, but just from what I've gathered, I think they finally just caved in and made this concession. So to remove any leverage from AEW or any other competing league, because from what I understand, the revenues can be significant. Like Zelina Vega was making quite a bit of money at Paige and didn't want to give up that money for nothing. So I was like, well, why not go to AEW? And I think that this takes some of that leverage away by letting them on. It doesn't cost WWE anything anyway. So, and as far as going back to DJ's question, I think they know not to stay away from controversial topics and not to curse too much. It's not an official WWE platform, so it's only so much that the WWE management can do about it, but I think they follow the general rules of they know what to say and what to say in public. They're very well versed in what to do, so I don't think that's really going to be an issue as far as policing that.
All right, DJ, thank you for the phone call this week.
See you next week.
All right. And Darren, thank you for joining us here tonight. Appreciate your time, of course. And before we let you go, I will let you plug your social media as well as what you do for The Torch.
All right. Well, I write the Pro Wrestling Torch Impact TV report and pay-per-view recaps, so check those out. And I have a weekly Impact Wrestling podcast on the Torch VIP side with John Laszlo. If you want to catch me on social media, probably best to catch me on Instagram. You can find me at DKLSTL. And thanks for having me
awesome.
Today.
Of course, Darren. Thank you for joining me, and we'll have you on again soon. Next time there's a big Impact show, you know who I'm calling. I appreciate it.
Thanks.
And thank you for listening. Of course, we are here every Sunday, 8 p.m. Eastern, unless there's a WWE or AEW pay-per-view, as there will be in a couple weeks when Backlash hits. We'll be going on the air after Backlash, taking your immediate reaction to the show, phone calls and emails. As for next week, we'll be here with a full preview of WWE Backlash. I'll hope you join us then, because if it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America.